Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. This week, jury selection concluded for the trial of Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer who's charged in the murder of George Floyd. After a long, complicated jury selection process, the trial itself is set to begin on Monday. The recent jury selection process had been delayed mostly because of a legal dispute on whether a third-degree murder charge would be reinstated for Chauvin, and recently there was another dispute on what type of past evidence would be allowed in the trial. So for the coming weeks, we'll be periodically checking in with reporters in Minneapolis who are covering the trial. Helping us today is Brant Williams, correspondent for Minnesota Public Radio News, covering public safety, criminal justice, and racial disparities. Brant, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
So this week, the jury was selected, but it was delayed. Tell us about the delay. Why did that? What happened there? I know the judge was sort of wanting another juror, but there were questions about a certain juror. Break it down for us.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, there was the initial delay. They didn't even start on time as far as jury selection. They took that one day because of that dispute over the third degree murder charge. But after that got sorted out by a court decision, then they went ahead with the jury selection. Now, one of those delays, or at least hiccups in the process, came after news was reported of a settlement between the Floyd family and the city of Minneapolis, this historic $27 million settlement. And so the judge went back. He had already selected a number of jurors. So the judge went back and called those seven of those jurors who'd already been seated before this news broke, and had to ask them, were you exposed to this news? If you were, did it have an effect on you? And he found that there were two of those jurors who couldn't put that news aside. And so he had to strike them. And that was a big setback. The judge was clearly annoyed by all this pretrial publicity, and even made a statement at the end of court one day saying, everybody needs to stop talking about this. You know, and he was—
This being the settlement you're talking about.
The settlement, yeah. And he was pointing his comments mostly at the city of Minneapolis. He was very frustrated that the city brought this up. They chose to settle this at this time, right in the middle of jury selection on this high-profile trial. So
do we know, have we
major...
heard anything from the city, Brant, about the decision to do that? Because the timing, I mean, the judge really can't, say much about it. It's news. But why do we know, why did the city choose to announce it at that time? Is there any word on that?
Yes, that question was put to the city attorney, Jim Rowiter, and he had said that basically there's no good time to make a settlement of this amount and of this magnitude. And he said there was no guarantee that if they had waited several weeks or maybe even a couple months later, that this deal may have not been available. But, you know, there are people who push back on that, who asked the question, well, why didn't the city just announce that they've reached a settlement, but they won't announce it until after the criminal trial?
And that's a good question. I mean, did they have any answer to that? Or, I mean, saying there's really no good time to do it feels like a non-answer.
Well, you know, this is one of those situations where they're faced in the middle of this large criminal trial. And by the way, the mayor of Minneapolis is running for re-election this year, too. I don't know if that was part of his calculations. I don't want to necessarily put that. But, you know, as journalists, we always keep that in mind when we hear about, you know, public officials making high profile decisions like this.
Brant, let's talk a little bit about the evidence that will be introduced to the trial. There was a lot of sort of back and forth about what video evidence would be presented. What do we know about what they're presenting regarding Chauvin's past?
Right. So there's a lot of questions about Chauvin's record as a police officer, that he had been the subject of dozens or more than a dozen complaints. I've been talking to lawyers about that prospect of and basically why this type of evidence will not be presented. The rules of evidence would prohibit like what you would call character evidence, and that would include past incidents or complaints against Derek Chauvin that were not relevant to what happened on May 25th of last year. Now, there will be a couple incidents that will be allowed at trial that are based on incidents that Derek Chauvin was involved in. And they loosely involve him either being involved in or witnessing an arrest of someone who needed to be restrained, and the officers actually controlled this person in a way. In one of those instances, the officers controlled the person who is having an apparent crisis, and they moved that person on their side to keep them from possibly dying. And that would be a way to, I guess, illustrate the training that officers are given, how they're supposed to react in that situation. So that's going to be part of Chauvin's past that will come out at the trial.
And what about evidence regarding George Floyd? I know that there was talk about having some sort of video showing Mr. Floyd in the past. And how is that relevant, Brant, to what the incident is that we all witnessed through video of his death?
Right. So that's some evidence that came from this May of 2019 arrest. Now, the judge has been very clear about how he wants to narrow the scope of that testimony and that evidence. He will allow a short clip of body camera video from an officer who approaches George Floyd in a car. The officer is pointing a gun at him, and the judge will allow the jury to see what transpired between that time when the officer approaches Mr. Floyd and then Mr. Floyd gets out of the vehicle. Now, Judge Cahill said he basically is, he wants to show, or at least he will allow the defense to show what physical reaction George Floyd had to having a gun pointed at him after having ingested drugs. But he said he will not allow the prosecutors to, the prosecutors to introduce testimony that would maybe opine how Floyd's behaviors could be seen as symptoms of anxiety or claustrophobia during the May 25th arrest. Now, this is all going to be closely watched by, I can imagine, the judge is going to be keeping tight reins on how these lawyers try to argue, and they're going to walk up to a line, perhaps, and the judge is going to make sure that they don't cross it. Because
what line, Brant? Because I feel like when you're present, I have participated in juries and criminal cases in particular many, many years ago. And I'm just wondering that the character references that you're mentioning here, you know, depending on who is seated in the jury, could really have an effect on this, on the outcome of this trial if they're presented, you know, unnecessarily.
Right. And again, that video evidence, including the video evidence from last year when Mr. Floyd died, to the May of 2019 evidence, it's going to be very impactful. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people are going to see things that perhaps they had not seen before that 2019 video. So you're right. I mean, it does have the potential to really sway jurors to the defense's case. And that's something that the prosecutors have been trying to prevent. They've been trying to keep that evidence out of the case, of the testimony.
The trial is going to be televised. What are your thoughts on having the trial be televised? I mean, are we looking at, you know, this is something that was sort of a surprise to me. How are folks taking it there?
Yeah, I was surprised as well, but I'm kind of pleased in a way for a couple different reasons. One is I just think this will be an educational experience for everyone who decides to tune in. As someone who's covered a lot of trials, you know, you get exposed, you see like the day in and day out types of drudgery even. There are sidebars, there are outside of jury discussions, sometimes there are lots of objections. You know, you may be sitting for a while with nothing happening, you know, during one of these sidebar conferences. They turn on some white noise in the courtroom so you can't actually overhear what they're saying. And so that's going to be something that the whole public is going to see, and that this is not like TV trials and dramas on TV showing lots of outbursts and, you know, objection. And so that's not going to happen. So people are going to see that. But it will be an odd setup being in the courtroom, not seeing a gallery of spectators, not feeling that buzz of energy that happens when a defendant walks into the courtroom and people stop their side conversations and watch him. So it's going to be very strange, but I think this could be a very educational experience for people who decide to tune in.
Of course, I'm imagining that there will be folks limited because of COVID-19. Are there any other differences that we should expect to see because of the pandemic right now?
Yeah, we're going to see plexiglass barriers between the lawyers and their teams and between the defense lawyer and Derek Chauvin. The judge is going to be behind plexiglass, and the jurors, which you will not see the jurors, but the jurors in the courtroom are all separated into small desks that look like almost school desks. And so everybody is going to be spaced. And like I said, there will be no spectators to be in the courtroom watching.
Brant Williams is a correspondent for Minnesota Public Radio covering public safety, criminal justice, and racial disparities. Brant, thanks so much.
You're welcome.